enough for Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Hey, thanks for downloading the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. You're about to spend an hour, or up to an hour, depending on how busy you are, with my special guest today, Jason Leopold, the journalist now writing for Vice News. And Jason has a slew of important stories he's published recently, including the battle over the Feinstein torture review by the new chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Richard Burr, and the fight over the so-called Panetta review. What are they hiding? We're also going to talk about Jason's important video interview with Joe Hickman, a former guard at Guantanamo, who says those three guys that the officials said committed suicide back in 2006, they were murdered. We'll dig into that. Also, the new book published by a continuing prisoner at Guantanamo named Slahi, a Mauritanian man. The release of Shaker Amer, well, it still hasn't happened, but Jason is about the only reporter who covered the conversation between Prime Minister David Cameron and President Obama at the White House last week. We'll talk about a number of other issues with Jason Leopold, including a follow-up that was put to me by one of our listeners, Dick Attlee. Dick, you're going to hear the answer to your question at the very end of this conversation with Jason Leopold. And Dick is on my list of people to thank today for his subscription support of the Peter B. Collins podcast. Dick is on my list here with Faith Peoples, Andy Betmanis, and Terry Paris. They're all supporters, and I'd like you to join them. Come on over to peterbcollins.com, click on the link under my picture that says sign up. That's where you choose $5, $10, $20 a month, or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. And new annual subscribers from anywhere in the world get an e-book bonus edition of Pepe Escobar's new publication called Empire of Chaos. Set up a subscription. I'd love to send it to you. Jason Leopold, the investigative journalist now reporting for Vice News, returns to our program today. He's been busting out a lot of secrets. And with his lawsuits using the Freedom of Information Act, he's chewing on some more. Jason has been publishing nearly daily in the last week or two, and we're going to try to recap some of his important reporting. And Jason, I just want to note that many of the great reports that you've published recently with Joseph Hickman, who was a guard at Guantanamo, with Mitchell, the guy who was an architect of the torture programs, these are all the result of your toiling in the proverbial vineyards for many years. And I really appreciate the work that you've done and how it brings into your wheelhouse these important recent stories.
I appreciate you saying that, Peter. I mean, it's been a very long, painstaking process to be able to, first of all, obtain this information, in some ways be a little bit ahead of my colleagues in reporting it, and reporting it at a time when it was sort of overlooked or dismissed. And now a second look is taking place, and it seems that it's getting attention all over again. So I'm certainly grateful for that. There's no hard feelings on my part about the time in which it took for people to take notice of it. But I'm very grateful for for the kind words and the fact that as always that you recognize that.
And Jason, I recently interviewed Professor Bob McChesney. His new book has some fascinating commentary, and it includes this little gem about an interview that he submitted to, conducted by Charlie Rose, who is seen as this intellectual giant on PBS and on the CBS Morning News. And he described Rose's role as being the border policeman for the range of legitimate debate. And that made me think about you, because you don't accept borders on your reporting. You don't accept the limits that are put in place by the government and enabled and accepted by most major media outlets. And I think that informs so much of the work you do, Jason.
Thank you. I'm very grateful for that. And you know, that that's very interesting. And it's interesting that, McChesney said that. And I appreciate you looking at me as an example. And that actually came with, with experience, Peter. And what I mean experience in terms of having in the past, to some degree, accepting some limit, even though I was eager to push it further and to try to obtain information. Once you learn that what takes place behind the scenes at any sort of government agency or about a program, and you discover that it is not what we were told, it is the narrative is far different than what the public was told, it completely changes everything. It changes everything with regard to how one would operate and perform their job as a journalist, and it certainly changed the way I've conduct myself as a journalist. And again, just to cite the Freedom of Information Act, that is part of the reason, certainly, that I am so aggressive in using that tool to pry loose, government secrets.
You published a memoir a few years ago called News Junkie, and I would like to suggest the title for your next memoir be FOIA Junkie.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, I'm currently at 21 lawsuits against the government and 21 FOIA lawsuits against the government, upwards of 1,000 FOIA requests. So and I think that everything I'm asking for would be of interest to the public.
Well, it makes your trip to the mailbox each day that much more exciting. You recently got a document, and I just got a quick look at it when you put it up on Facebook, but they gave you a report that was entirely redacted, all 15 pages. Is that right?
This was something I've never received before, Peter. So a year ago, I filed a FOIA request with Central Command, and it was about this Yemen fiscal year 2014 strike program, in which basically the Pentagon was going to provide assistance to Yemen so they can operate their own drones to conduct their own targeted killings. And so, I asked for everything that they had on this program. They produced 15 pages, and everything was redacted except for the sort of the subheadings, so talking points, background, and everything that followed was just completely redacted. Not a single shred of detail was included in any of the emails that they turned over. So this was, of all the FOIA requests I've filed and the documents I received and even the responses I've received, this was one where it was just amazing because they literally took a year to process and produce nothing.
And Jason, one of the, if I may, big pinatas that you're going after is the full unredacted, 6,700-page Senate Intelligence Committee review of torture, rendition, and detention, and a fully unredacted version of the executive summary. Do I have that right?
Well, actually, what I'm going for is actually a full unredacted version of the executive summary. The ACLU is going after the full torture report.
Okay.
Now, I didn't go after the full torture report for, part of the reason is that that would have been, there's no doubt that that will be a very, very, very lengthy battle. And, the ACLU is a huge organization. I have an amazing Freedom of Information Act attorney named Jeffrey Light. Mm-hmm. He's a solo practitioner. It would be an enormous amount of resources for him and time and money to invest in going after that. So what we are going after is an unredacted version of the executive summary. We're also going after the CIA's own internal review, commonly referred to as the Panetta Review.
Right, and this has led to a new level of gamesmanship from the newly installed chair, Republican Richard Burr of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, I don't think he's descended from Aaron Burr, but with these legal moves, I have to say he's not even related to Raymond Burr, the famous Perry Mason character. But, when we look at that, what they're doing is he has engaged in some maneuvers where he is demanding that the White House and other agencies who received a copy of the full report return them all. And it's not just housekeeping where he wants to maintain a chain of custody. Explain what the maneuver is about and what the difference is between documents that are considered agency record as opposed to congressional record.
Well, this was fascinating because, we learned right after the State of the Union speech Tuesday evening, the Huffington Post broke the story and then the New York Times followed. And basically, the story was somewhat simple. The new head of the Senate Intelligence Committee is demanding that the White House return all copies of the full unredacted torture report that Senator Dianne Feinstein, the previous chair of that committee had shared back in December. And there was a Washington Post story that contained partial language from Senator Burr's letter. And once I saw that language, what he was saying, I'm going to paraphrase it, but basically he was saying, or he advised the White House that this document should not be entered into any executive branch system of records. Now, immediately when I read that, Peter, it set off alarm bells, and I knew exactly what he was talking about. And by saying that it should not be entered into any executive branch record system, what he's saying is that this is not an agency record. And that it, in fact, is a congressional record. And the difference is that Congress is not subject to the provisions of FOIA, whereas all executive branch agencies are. So if this document would have been, or if it is, in fact, entered into an executive branch agency filing system, that means that it is subject to the Freedom of Information Act, and the government has to move forward in certainly, processing our request, my request, the ACLU's request, to gain access to this document. Because previously, Peter, they had been arguing that this was not an agency record, that this was a congressional record, and therefore they do not have any control over it. So it became very clear that this was an attempt to circumvent the Freedom of Information Act. Maybe there is no coincidence here. The last night, the government filed they were due to file a response just in the sort of latest development in our Freedom of Information Act case, my case, and the ACLU's separate case. And the government said that this document, this full torture report, in fact, is not an agency record. Hmm. And they cited the letter that Burr sent to President Obama to back up and justify their position. And so yesterday, you know, I spent, prior to these court filings, I spent much of the day digging into this. And in fact, I found out that there's no question that this was, you know, a clear-cut attempt to circumvent the Freedom of Information Act, that this senator, whose main job is, you know, to perform oversight of the intelligence agencies, where he stands certainly on, you know, matters of secrecy and his, you know, this is a sign of his unwavering support for the CIA. I was stunned, you know, that this is an attempt to sort of, you know, sweep this back under the rug and to deprive the public of gaining access to it.
And now, and Jason, the same dodge is being attempted regarding the underlying Panetta review itself, because you have reported on several occasions that they have marked all those pages draft and, you know, internal work document, and these are exclusions to any requirement to surrender them under FOIA. And so the move by Chairman Burr, which I want to underscore his assertion, does not make it so, that these are agency records versus congressional records. But this ploy is a fairly consistent and predictable reaction from the CIA.
It certainly is. I mean, it's clear that the CIA does not want this out, does not want the full report out. You know, Senator Feinstein, when she announced that the executive summary was going to be released, and she said that at the time that possibly at a later date, maybe they would submit the full report for declassification. You know, it's clear that Feinstein was sort of, you know, maybe they wanted it out, maybe they didn't want it out, but I started to learn a bit more yesterday when, you know, I took a second look at this transmittal letter. This is a letter that accompanied a copy of the report that she sent to the White House, advising the White House to distribute this report to as broadly as they saw fit. You know, copies of this report were also sent to Departments of State, Justice, Defense, the FBI, and CIA Inspector General. But the letter was significant because the language that she used in basically saying that, you know, this report should be sent out also indicated that it was, you know, not a congressional record. Mm-hmm. And it's a reversal, Peter, from a position that she had about a year ago. And certainly when I was trying to access the executive summary at a time when the committee was not releasing it because they were battling the CIA. So it appeared to me that, you know, her committee was in a way trying to suggest that there is a way to access this full report, and it's through the Freedom of Information Act. And honestly, you know, no one would be able to sort of realize that unless you're familiar with, you know, how FOIA works. So it was a very interesting move, chess move, if you will, by, you know, by Feinstein. But I do also want to bring to your attention, just if I may, you know, a colleague of mine who works for OpenTheGovernment.org, she's also someone who had spent quite a bit of time investigating the CIA's torture program and the, you know, treatment of detainees in custody of the U.S. military. Her name is Catherine Hawkins. She worked on she was the lead investigator on the Constitution Project's Detainee Task Force report. She just sent me an email, Peter, and she says in this email that from DOJ's own FOIA guidance, and it's basically shows that in, or it contains language in here that says Congress's manifestation of its intent to control certain records like this torture report cannot be accomplished on a post hoc basis long after the original creation or transfer of requested documents. Instead, Congress's intent to exert control over the records must be evident from the circumstances surrounding their creation or transmittal. Now, in, you know, less legalese, what, you know, what this basically says is, sorry, Senator Burr, you can't get this report back, you know, because the intent was clear when Feinstein sent this out. So This is certainly going to be important language in terms of, my FOIA case. But in addition to sort of schooling Senator Burr on what he's trying to do here as well.
And Jason, what occurs to me here is that this is similar to the games that the Obama administration has been playing, trying to assert that things that are documented, published, and out in the open are nevertheless to be treated as secret. And this has occurred in court cases challenging rendition, challenging drones, the Alaki case. And so to see the administration be on the receiving end of this is interesting in certain ways. And it also brings up the question, to what extent is the White House quietly or silently supporting this move by Senator Burr? Because you note in your most recent article that your sources say an unknown third party advised Burr to make this request. And I wouldn't be surprised if that unnamed third party is either in the White House or aligned with it, because they were running interference for George Tenet and the others who wanted to redact key and vital parts even of the executive summary. And the White House allowed this squabble between the Senate and the CIA to play out without an investigation by the Justice Department. We'll get to the CIA's whitewash investigation of itself here in a moment. But it just strikes me that the Obama White House never wanted to see this report published, even though they publicly postured to the opposite.
That's absolutely correct, Peter, and I appreciate you raising the issue of the White House. I can say pretty confidently that the White House absolutely was not supportive of anything that the committee had been doing toward the last or over the last year that they were what they were trying to do and what they were doing with regard to this report. The White House did not want this out. So what the White House had been saying publicly about their, the statements that they were issuing about, supporting this effort, what took place behind the scenes from people I've spoken to, from Senate aides and various other people who are involved in the process, said, the opposite is absolutely what's the case. And as I noted, the language that Senator Burr wrote in this letter, I mean, this didn't just come, he didn't just think this up. He was advised to do this. You do not say, do not enter this into any executive branch system of records if you are not thinking about the Freedom of Information Act, if you're not thinking about how this could affect the public release of a particularly sensitive and an explosive document. So someone, I don't know who that is, certainly did advise him, could very well be a staffer. And it could be a staffer who, perhaps had conversations with others. But there's no question that he was, that he was advised. This was not something that just surfaced last week on a whim.
So let's turn.
And by the way, let me just add, Peter,
sure,
that he sent this letter last week. Okay, and given a little bit of thought now myself, and we knew far in advance that the Justice Department was due to issue a response in our FOIA lawsuit in which they would have to basically tell a judge whether this document was, going to be, whether they were going to process it or not. And sure enough, yesterday when the, as I said, when the Justice Department finally did respond, the gist of their argument is that, Senator Burr doesn't want this out.
Jason, next I want to turn to the story that you published at Vice News on January 14 regarding the CIA Accountability Board. And it was ordered by the president last summer to look into the issues in the explicit conflict we're talking about between the Intelligence Committee and the CIA over the Panetta review. and the agency led by John Brennan accused the Senate staffers of breaking the law. Senator Feinstein accused the CIA of bad faith and a little worse. And I think this is a significant constitutional crisis that emerged here. And so we get this accountability board, and they picked another, you know, moderate Democrat from Indiana, Evan Bayh, the former Democrat who chaired the Intelligence Committee when he was a member of the Senate, to run this committee. They put Bob Bauer, the president's close counsel and expert on campaign finance law, into the mix there with three former CIA people. And surprise, surprise, they decided that the CIA was innocent of any wrongdoing and did not breach the computers of the Senate Intelligence Committee staffers and spy on them. This is a bizarre kind of whitewash. Tell us your thoughts now, you know, a week or so later, about the impact of this inside committee's whitewash.
Well, I think you stated it correctly, Peter, that this is an example of the constitutional crisis that's sort of, you know, bubbling up underneath everything that's been happening with regard to this report, this Panetta review, you know, over the past year and a half. You know, keep in mind that the Senate they voted originally to approve this report and submit it for declassification in December 2012. It took 2 years to get that out, and during that time, there were lots of attacks, infighting, the claims of spying, theft, calls for criminal investigations. So again, that all revolved around the fact that this report, you know, was going to come out. The CIA didn't want it to come out. The White House clearly didn't want it to come out, even though they said they did. So a lot of accusations being traded, you know, going back and forth. Now, I will say that the CIA's report, for me, I think that it clearly shows that there are, you know, things that took place on, you know, but between both sides that, you know, that were troubling, concerning, and certainly raised lots of questions as to really what was the agreement that went on, you know, behind the scenes when the Senate and the CIA agreed in 2009 to allow for this investigation. What does the actual agreement look like between the Senate and the CIA over the use of the computers, the computer system that was set up? Because the report says that the Senate we're quoting the CIA's own internal, you know, review board, but they say that the Senate stole documents. They stole this Panetta review. They didn't have they were not authorized, you know, to copy it, to sneak out of this secure facility with it, and to lock it in a safe. They said that there were other incidents that took place over the years. One was, some staffer brought in a camera to the secure facility where they were reviewing these highly classified documents. That person was later, you know, kicked off the team that was investigating this. So, you know, there clearly were a lot of incidents, and so I think that the CIA, you know, makes some good arguments, or this accountability review board, makes some good arguments. But there's also, you know, what's missing here, Peter, is a little bit more transparency. We just don't know what was, you know, what was agreed upon.
Well, I agree with you that Senator Feinstein compromised herself and the integrity of this review from the get-go by essentially accepting that there would be no full investigation, no indictments against individuals for the wrongdoing exposed. And the other point that I would make is that it's very clear that the agency is concerned about more than what we know is in the Panetta review. After all, the central thrust of the Feinstein executive summary that was published in December is that the torture techniques that were used by the CIA did not, in fact, produce usable intelligence of any significance. And the public has already decided that they're rejecting the summary of the Feinstein Review, because the polls show that almost 2 out of 3 Americans just ignore what the report reveals, and say that shows like Homeland and 24 and movies like Zero Dark 30 represent the truth in their perception. And so, right. So if the central thrust of the Panetta Review is the same as the Feinstein Review, then, you know, they've already won that struggle, and they wouldn't be running this rear guard post hoc action by Senator Burr to try to seal this up and bury it. So I, you know, your sources have given you at least some idea of what the Panetta Review included. And would you agree with my speculation here that what they're hiding has to be more than the conclusion that was reached in the report that was partly published?
Oh, there's no question, Peter. I mean, that report, the 6,900-page report, it goes into the, you know, into great detail about 99 other CIA captives who are not even included in the executive summary. The executive summary only highlights the cases of 20 captives, and that executive summary is certainly a horrific look at you know, at how this program was operated. And you know, of course, the CIA has its response, and the minorities have their response to it. So you have three different responses out there that were competing with, you know, what's the truth here? But this larger report, as I said, it goes into the cases of 99 other detainees that we don't even know about, that we don't know what was done to them, what happened at these black sites. You know, what are the countries that where these black sites operated? So yes, there is lots of detail in the larger report, and if you believe, you know, the senators Mark Udall, Ron Wyden, even Feinstein and Heinrich about what the Panetta Review contains, I mean, they're saying it's a smoking gun. It certainly matches up, you know, with the with their own review. But also note that you know, the CIA's Accountability Review Board says that, hey, you know, the Senate, actually, what we found is that their report, the language in their report, actually closely matches the language that was in the Panetta Review. And the, and what they're saying is that the Panetta Review informed, or was frankly copied by Senate staffers as they were putting together, you know, their report. So, you know, what's the point in all this, Peter, is that, you know, or what's my point? My point is that there are so many different stories out there, so many different reports. You know, writing this yesterday, what I was trying to put together, I can't tell you how complicated that was, because we're dealing with some of the most complex issues, the Freedom of Information Act, 20 to 30 different reports, different claims, accusations being traded back and forth. And I'll tell you that I don't believe anyone, you know. You won't get see me saying, you know, I'm a reporter. I just want to report what's there. But in terms of, you know, where I stand, it's, I don't believe the Democrats. I don't believe the Republicans. Don't believe the CIA, you know. So I don't think there's one side that's telling the, you know, the whole truth. I do think that report, though, is very important. It certainly is, you know, definitely, you know, one of the most significant oversight investigations that has taken place since, you know, the Church Committee. But you're right. The public is sort of just, you know, kind of shrugged about it. And I think that you also have to take into consideration that the fact that, you know, this report came out at a time when, you know, ISIS is beheading people. Journalists, others, that you know, where you know, the attacks in Paris, you know, that took place, and so the public is seeing that, hey, the CIA, you know, tortured a bunch of Muslims, and they're okay with that, Peter. You know, that's sort of the, I wouldn't even say a dirty secret; it's just the truth. I mean, yeah. You know, people. I'll just note that I you know, I was reading some of the reviews about American Sniper, this new movie that's out. And over the weekend, you know, it made a bucket full of cash. Mm-hmm. And if you going on to Twitter, you know, social media, and seeing people who have no problem, you know, putting their names on this, how they reacted to this movie, some people saying that movie, you know, made me feel like I want to go out and kill a bunch of Muslims, a bunch of Arabs.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the sentiment that exists. So you have to also look at that, you know, the report in that sort of lens, or through that lens, and why there's that reaction to it.
And Jason, I'm going to shift to some of your other reports, but in wrapping up about the Panetta review and this struggle over the CIA torture review by the Intelligence Committee, I just did a fresh Google search, and I have not been able to find a single interview that was conducted with Leon Panetta on his book tour last fall where anybody even asked him in the broadest way about the Panetta review. And it just, again, underscores my point of how many corporate media reporters accept the limits of what they're going to ask about or what they're permitted to ask about. And, of course, if nobody asks him the question, then he's not going to volunteer to comment on it.
Right. It's true. And I think that certainly, you know, what I said holds true in terms of, you know, with certain reporters about, no big deal, let's move on. I mean, I'm on my second read, just about finishing my second read of this torture report, Peter. You know, this is not a report that is or should be just a one-day story. You know, this is not something that should even be a week. This is something that, you know, one can pull out dozens and dozens of stories to, you know, to discuss what, you know, what took place over the course of 6 years. That, you know, this top secret program, what was, you know, what was done. And, you know, I think it's sort of an unfortunate reality that exists, you know, certainly in the media, that a report's out, we got an executive summary, here's the fact sheet, let's copy the fact sheet and sort of move on. Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk to the same old talking heads, you know, who are part of this program, who've been out there numerous times. You know, Jose Rodriguez and you know, former counterterrorism chief and Michael Hayden, former head of the CIA. You know, it's one of the reasons why I looked to contact the architect, the actual architect of this program.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a very, very, very long time. He's the psychologist, James Mitchell. I spent years, Peter, trying to get him to discuss this with me.
Mm-hmm.
And to talk about this. And, you know, it was difficult, cannot even describe what it was, you know, what that was like, but I was determined to, you know, to get him on record. And, you know, we produced our first documentary with him here, you know, right after this aired and this documentary aired and the torture report came out, I got him on record to admit that he was personally waterboarded KSM, Abu Zubaydah, and Adnan al-Rahim al-Nashiri, suspected USS Cole bomber. So, you know, that to me was really, really important. And what was interesting was, yeah, I may have discussed this with you before, is, you know, what were the terms? How did I get him to agree to speak?
Mm-hmm.
I called this guy up on the phone and just kept in communication with him, you know, in order to, you know, get to this point. So, you know, back to your, you know, point about Leon Panetta, I'm not sure if anyone's even thinking about it, you know, that that's what, you know, what a reporter should do is, well let me see what Leon Panetta says.
Panetta came through my town for his book tour, and I had a moment with him as he signed my copy of his book. And he and I go all the way back to 1989 when he was a member of the House of Representatives, then became the chair of the Budget Committee. And so we have a kind of ancient connection. And so I said hello to him, and he said, "Oh, Peter, hi, how you doing?" And I said, "I'd like to interview you after you get finished with the main phase of your book tour." He said, "Okay, yeah, after I get some time off." So I followed up, and his publicist declined to arrange an interview. Now, I didn't telegraph to him what I wanted to talk about, but he was satisfied to go out in these carefully controlled settings, hawk his book, and talk tough about the Islamic State. But truly, there are very few interviewers. I'll offer as an exception Michael Krasny at Public Radio in San Francisco did give him, you know, not an unfriendly, but a relatively tough interview, but still failed to bring up these issues. Jason, next, I want to turn to, as I mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, that you first spoke to Joseph Hickman at least 5 years ago. He was a guard at Guantanamo, and I recall the story that you published. I think it was at Truth Out. And he now has published a book, and you this week released a very powerful video interview with Joe Hickman, and he has really gone into depth in his book about the events of June 9th, 2006, first exposed by Scott Horton, that three men held at Guantanamo were individually transported out of the main camp, and when they returned, they were dead. And it was said, the official report was, that they committed suicide. The story has always been lacking significant credibility. And Hickman, in the title of his book, now calls those murders. But when you quizzed him, he said, well, I still need more proof to actually say in the text of the book that these men were murdered. But he firmly believes that these were not suicides. Do I summarize that correctly?
Absolutely. That's exactly what he believes. You know, Joe Hickman was the main source for that Scott Horton report in Harper's. And I first, met Joe, as you said, about 5 years ago now. And Joe actually tipped me off to the use of a controversial drug known as mefloquine, which we spoke about. Joe told me that there was, you know, something odd that was taking place. Every Guantanamo detainee was given this controversial drug called mefloquine. And Joe discovered this while he was researching his book, while he was looking at the government's own files, particularly or specifically the autopsy reports. And the autopsy report of one particular detainee, and which listed that he'd been given mefloquine. And so he looked into that, and the story, I did a series of stories with my colleague, Jeff Kay, over at Truth Out. And, by the way, if I may just sidetrack for a quick moment, what we were talking about earlier, what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, Peter, it actually, you know, when that story came out on the mefloquine, it was largely dismissed, Peter.
I remember.
It was dismissed by human rights groups. And I'll call them out, Physicians for Human Rights as well. It took 4 years, 4.5 years, for finally these groups to say, hey, this needs to be investigated, this use of mefloquine. So, you know, that we worked very hard on that story, and, you know, and Joe's the guy who gave it to us. But, As you noted, Joe spent years putting this book together, investigating it. This guy is an amazing investigator. I mean, he not only obtained these government documents himself to be able to craft this narrative, and obviously working on his own doing his own research, by speaking to other guards and recounting what he saw when he was there, to put together a book that is truly compelling and really does sort of provide amazing insight into Guantanamo. I mean, it's extraordinary what he has endured, over the years, and how these deaths have haunted him. Those are some of the areas that I was not able to get into this due to editing in the the video interview. But this is a really powerful book, and you know, the book comes out. It's to me, I think that this is interesting, is that it is out at a time, or it came out the same day that a detainee at Guantanamo published his book.
Mm-hmm. And that is, his name is Mohamedou Slahi. He is originally from Mauritania. And it is remarkable that portions of his diary, much of which has been redacted, but it's surprising what did survive the censorship process, has been published in a book and serialized by the Guardian newspaper in London. And Jason, okay, some pretty remarkable revelations here, in despite the fact that this was heavily censored before publication. Slahi says that he was subjected to torture techniques personally approved by Don Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense. And here's a new one. All right. We've heard in the past how torturers will use cigarettes to burn people. Well, here they used a cigarette boat. They took him out on a high-speed boat after forcing him to drink salt water, which makes you go a little crazy. And then they beat him for 3 hours on the boat while he is immersed in ice. Now, I don't know what the concept is behind this kind of torture, but this is simply another example of how unaccountable our people have been. Some of this was directly approved by Don Rumsfeld. And so it is just shocking to hear these stories surface. The other key one is that they presented him with a letter that was purported to be from his mother. And whoever forged this letter misspelt the guy's name and didn't know that his mother is illiterate. And so Slahi from the start knew that that was a ruse. These are pretty remarkable disclosures.
Yeah, it's harrowing. And then to read it, the sort of looking at this book and then looking at Joe Hickman's book. A guard and a detainee, both coming out with books at the same time, both discussing, talking about issues of torture and the treatment of detainees, and both sharing their own personal stories about their experiences at Guantanamo. I mean, Peter, this is just unbelievable. I'm sort of almost at a loss for words just thinking about it because of the secrecy that revolves around this place. And Joe Hickman's book is not redacted in any way. He did not submit it for a review. This is his story. But these books coming on the heels of the CIA torture report, the Senate CIA torture report. This story, this narrative, it continues. It's not going anywhere.
Well, and Jason, just when you think we've really reached the bottom, there is a report from ABC News today that the officer in charge of the naval base, not the commandant of the prison, but the guy in charge of the whole Gitmo facility, has been fired. His name is Captain John Nettleton. He was relieved of command yesterday, according to sources. He is accused of having an affair with a woman. And that woman's husband, who also worked at the base, was recently found floating in the waters off the base a day after he had been reported missing. Now, it's entirely possible his death is a suicide following his learning of this affair. But I have no further details. I can only say that when you run a barbaric facility like this, maybe it affects your own ability to have a moral compass.
Yeah, and the folks at Guantanamo, the officials there, are making very clear to reporters that he had nothing to do with the Joint Task Force side of Guantanamo, which is on the other side of the island. That this is the naval side, but what's fascinating is that they found the fact that this affair was discovered during the NCIS investigation, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service investigation into the death of this, this woman's husband. And it's just another in a long line, what seems like, of commanding officers who are being busted for adultery. You know, the fact that you then slap on that this is, you know, this is at Guantanamo, yeah, you're never going to be able to get away from the fact that that's immediately going to conjure up the image that this is happening, you know, at Guantanamo, you know, the detention facility.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, in a way, there seems to be, you know, certainly a shift in attitude toward these issues. And what I mean by that is, like I said, you know, you're seeing the book by Joe Hickman, by Slahi. You know, we continue to see detainees released, surprisingly. But you also, what we're also seeing is a fierce, fierce defense, Peter, by lawmakers such as Lindsey Graham, John McCain, Kelly Ayotte, to keep Guantanamo open, but to continue to use it as an interrogation facility. A fierce defense by CIA to defend, you know, the historical record. And to what, you know, what they would say is correct the historical record. So, you know, at the same time, you have people like Senator Mark Udall, whose intentions appear to be good, that are you know, there's nothing but rhetoric there. You know, this is the guy who was sort of considering reading, you know, the torture report on the Senate floor,
yeah,
who said he's going to push for the release of the Panetta review. You know, Senator Ron Wyden made some similar statements, but you know, lots of talk, but really no action on what truly is difficult. You know, so we talked about this, Peter, and that what do we do with all this information? You know, we've got all this information, Peter. We have a book by a guard, Joe Hickman, who says that these detainees were killed. And by the way, let me point out that a former spokesman for Guantanamo or several former spokespeople from Guantanamo have gone on to Amazon to attack Joe. They haven't even read the book, but they, you know, they've gone out there to attack him. I'm perhaps they're doing that on their own, but certainly seems like, you know, this is a resurgence of what took place after Scott Horton's story came out, the fierce attacks on Joe's integrity and credibility, so that's interesting that you know, a former spokesperson is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I just want to continue and say is what are we supposed to do with this info? Nobody's being held accountable.
Yeah,
there aren't any investigations, Peter. There aren't any hearings. There's nothing. We're we have a book that describes the brutal torture, you know, from the detainee's own words. You know, one would think that somebody would want to find out, well, is that true? Did that happen? You know, let's look into that.
Well,
should somebody
there's also the obvious double standard being applied to David Petraeus, where it's pretty clear that he leaked classified information to his lover, Paula Broadwell, and that he is going to skate for any responsibility for that. And so it's very clear that certain people, certain agencies are not only above the law, but they have the leverage to prevent people from even asking the right questions. And Jason, I want to be mindful of your time because I promised to let you go about half an hour ago. But you were the only journalist who I saw who followed up on the visit by British Prime Minister David Cameron to the White House about a week ago, and in particular about whether or not he asked President Obama to release Shaker Amer. And I scoured the web looking for stories. The only one I found was yours at Vice News. And what you revealed is that, in fact, the Prime Minister did bring up the case of Shaker Amer and that Obama acknowledged its importance to the British people and made a vague promise to prioritize his case. I don't think he said prioritize his release. It was prioritize his case. Now, Amer's already been cleared twice for release, including by the Obama team. So what do you make of this exchange? And will our friend Andy Worthington's campaign to free Shaker Amer pay off?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, that, you know, it was clear, you know, David Cameron made it clear that, you know, he was going to discuss this with President Obama, that the White House knew this was going to be, you know, an issue, and, you know, they issued a statement. I really don't know what the word priority means. I know what it means when I look in the dictionary, and when my editor says, you know, you need to make that a priority, Jason, I say, yes, you know, yes, we'll do. but when it comes to, you know, this White House, I don't know what it means, because I don't think that they mean it in any sort of real way as to, you know, we'll get right on this and he'll leave. You know, Shakir Amar's attorney, you know, made a very good point. In actually, you know, he can answer your question here. He said, look, you know, this is the most powerful, you know, person or the president is a very powerful figure, President Obama. If he wanted to make this happen, it could happen tomorrow. Shakir Amar could be on a plane and could come home to the UK.
Hey, they could have authorized Cameron to fly through Guantanamo and pick him up.
Right. Yes. They could have done that. They could have done a lot. And so, as you noted, he's been cleared for release by two administrations, by a review board, by President Obama's own interagency, you know, review board that looked at these cases back in 2009. And it's not as if there's trouble finding a country that wants to take him, right? Because it's the UK.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that this is just kind of, you know, rhetoric. It's or an empty promise. It's a talking point. It's I absolutely believe it's a talking point. I think that they knew that this was going to, you know, be a question that was asked, and they prepared the president for it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think is you know, where that stands. I don't think that, or at least it appears to me that, you know, that Shakir is they're getting ready to release him anytime soon. So, you know, it's very odd considering that, you know, the President Obama said at a State of the Union that, you know, he will not relent until Guantanamo, you know, is shut down. And he wants to get rid of some of these, you know, detainees. When I say get rid of them, obviously, you know, transfer the ones that have been cleared. So, you know, logically, you would think that, well, we've got a country that's willing to take them. You know, they've got their own national security policies. If there's any sort of fear, he's got a family there. He's got children, and you know, let's let him go. But that doesn't seem to be happening. And the fact that you know, if nothing has happened over the past week, and I haven't heard anything, I think that sort of should be an indication of where that stands.
Jason, I also want to acknowledge an important story you published about Samir Khan, who was editing websites for Anwar al-Awlaki, was killed in the drone strike that took out Awlaki. And you revealed quite a lot of interesting background about his prior monitoring by the FBI and an apparent attempt to flip him into becoming an informant. And I hope people, if they haven't already, will read that at Vice News. Before we wrap up, I have one follow-up on something you mentioned earlier, and it was prompted by an email from a listener following the interview I did with you about your interview with James Mitchell, the architect of the torture program. And Dick Yes. Attlee, who listens in Maine, said, you know, Peter, I think it's really interesting how Jason got him to talk, but did he ask him exactly what he got from Abu Zubaydah and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in these torture sessions where waterboarding was used? And I didn't have an answer for it, so I'm relaying his question. Were you able to get him to comment on those, or did he duck behind his nondisclosure agreement?
Yeah, he mostly ducked behind that. I mean, he more or less said this, is that their entire understanding of how Al-Qaeda operated, the inner workings of Al-Qaeda, was produced by, you know, or that was obtained by Abu Zubaydah, or through the interrogations of Abu Zubaydah and KSM. I'll say this, that my own sort of understanding of who Abu Zubaydah was years ago and who, you know, he is, has evolved, Peter. And it's evolved in a way that, you know, he certainly was not a member of al-Qaeda. It did not swear bayat to Osama bin Laden. But it's very clear to me that Abu Zubaydah knew a lot about al-Qaeda. And, you know, I think that, by the way, this is not to justify, you know, that this guy should be tortured. Mm-hmm. I'm just simply saying that, you know, here you have an agency that apparently didn't know, you know, the inner workings of, you know, of this terrorist organization. You know, they got a couple of contractors to, you know, to come up with a program. He did hide behind the non-disclosure. But I will say that having spent a lot of time with Mitchell, he really wants to talk about what they got. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he certainly, you know, is he's defending his work. But he wants to talk about it. He really, really wants to talk about it. And, you know, I could tell you that right after this documentary came out, I mean, he was, you know, trying to get the CIA to, you know, lift parts of that, of certain parts of his non-disclosure. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we will be hearing, you will be hearing a lot more from him that time ahead, and I certainly haven't given up on it. Mm-hmm. In terms of trying to obtain, you know, that kind of info as well.
Very good, Jason Leopold. You're doing great work. Don't stop.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening all the way to the end of this conversation with Jason Leopold. I welcome your feedback, Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.